Even the peace process is full of tension.
And what I worry about is the threat from within, the retreat of Europe from some of its most fundamental values, values shared with the United States of America.
Ukraine eyes its reserves of rare earth minerals.
These resources include graphite, lithium, titanium, and uranium, minerals essential for defense, green energy, and high-tech applications industries.
And should the Federal Emergency Management Agency be eliminated?
I mean, honestly, it's not helped a lot of us around here, so even if he got rid of FEMA, wouldn't hurt or help us in any way.
Today is Monday, February 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. It's been a busy weekend for the international diplomacy crowd in Europe. Following last week's phone call between U.S. President Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin, Europe's role in the peace process between Russia and Ukraine has been in question. Then U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance barely mentioned Russia at the security conference in Munich, Germany, using his speech instead to warn European leaders of, quote, the threat from within, arguing that their governments are censoring far-right speech and failing to control migration. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wuda-Kuswara has our report.
An armed drone hit the outer shell of Ukraine's Chernobyl nuclear plant early Friday in an attack Kyiv blamed on Russia. While there were no signs of increased radiation, it raised anxiety among European leaders gathered at the Munich Security Conference in Germany on Friday. The meeting focused on the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which will mark 3 years next week.
The threat that I worry the most about vis-a-vis Europe is not Russia, it's not China, it's not any other external actor. And what I worry about is the threat from within, the retreat of Europe from some of its most fundamental values, values shared with the United States of America.
But in his address, U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance mentioned the war on Ukraine only in passing. He repeated calls for Europe to increase defense spending and said that Kyiv and Moscow can come to, quote, a reasonable settlement. Instead, Vance criticized what he said were European governments' censorship of Christian and far-right speech, voicing support for their right-wing anti-immigration parties. He criticized Romania, a NATO ally, for its recent cancellation of presidential election results over evidence of Russian disinformation.
If your democracy can be destroyed with a few hundred thousand dollars of digital advertising from a foreign country, then it wasn't very strong to begin with.
German Defense Minister Boris Pistorius slammed Vance's remarks.
He speaks of the annihilation of democracy, and if I have understood him correctly, he is comparing conditions in parts of Europe with those in authoritarian regions. That is not acceptable.
On the sidelines, Vance met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
We need to speak more, to work more, and to prepare the plan how to stop Putin and finish the war. We want peace very much, but we need real security guarantees.
At the White House Thursday, President Donald Trump dismissed Kyiv's NATO membership bid and its desire to win back Russian-occupied territories. Trump said he and Russian President Vladimir Putin have agreed to begin talks to end the war.
And I think we'll probably end up at some point getting a ceasefire in the not-too-distant future.
Trump's remarks are a repudiation of his predecessor Joe Biden's position to support Ukraine for as long as it takes. The shift was welcomed by Moscow, but caused alarm in Europe. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen.
A failed Ukraine would weaken Europe, but it would also weaken the United States.
The ceasefire in Gaza is also a focus. Trump wants to move Palestinians out and take over the enclave, a plan condemned by many leaders gathering in Munich. Patsy Wuda-Kuswara, VOA News, Washington.
Following the speech of Vance and the actions of President Trump, European leaders are nervous about being left behind as Russia-Ukraine peace talks are negotiated. Emma Gell of Reuters brings us up to speed.
French President Emmanuel Macron will host European leaders, including Britain's Prime Minister, on Monday for an emergency summit on the Ukraine war.
Slava Ukraine.
The hastily arranged meeting comes after U.S. officials suggested Europe would have no role in any talks on ending the conflict. Leaders from Germany, Poland, Italy, as well as NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte and Ursula von der Leyen and Antonio Costa from the European Union are expected to be at the summit.
The United States really is the big question mark at the moment.
Political scientist and Bertelsmann Stiftung executive board member Daniela Schwarzer spoke to Reuters about the shifting power dynamics.
We see that the United States wants to retreat from international organizations, so it is weakening structures of international order.
U.S. President Donald Trump stunned European allies last week when he announced he had a call with Russian President Vladimir Putin and would start a peace process. Trump's Ukraine envoy Keith Kellogg said on Saturday that Europe would not have a seat at the table for Ukraine peace talks. Washington had sent a questionnaire to European capitals last week asking what they could contribute to security guarantees for Kyiv and what the size of any European-led force might be, according to a document seen by Reuters. That's in addition to putting Ukraine leadership under pressure and asking for a deal on the country's rare earth minerals without any security guarantees. Schwarzer said it demonstrates the new approach by the Trump administration.
The message they are sending is that the United States is now the key player in the middle between the two conflicting parties and wants to bring this peace to an end without really wanting to be involved in the stabilization of the situation.
U.S. officials have insisted they will only settle for a durable peace deal and that Ukraine will be at the table. It was revealed later on Saturday that the U.S. and Russian officials will meet in Saudi Arabia in the coming days to start Ukraine peace talks. Dozens of similar summits have shown the 27-nation EU to be dithering, disunited, and struggling to come up with a cohesive plan to end the Ukraine war. Some countries were unhappy that the meeting was only for selected leaders and not a full EU summit, EU officials said. The French presidency sought to assuage those misgivings, saying Monday's meeting could lead to other formats.
That's Emma Zhel of Reuters reporting for us. Meanwhile, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky rejected a deal from Washington for control over rare earth minerals. Reuters' Olivia Zelino has that part of the story.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said on Saturday a draft minerals deal with Washington did not contain the security provisions that Kyiv needed. Three sources said the United States had proposed taking ownership of 50% of Ukraine's critical minerals.
It's not in our interests today, not in interests of sovereign Ukraine.
Zelensky is looking to secure post-war security guarantees as U.S. President Donald Trump pushes to end the war with Russia. Kyiv has placed high importance on the need for Ukraine to receive guarantees from the U.S. that would deter Russia from launching a new invasion once a peace deal is reached. Senior officials from Trump's administration will start peace talks with Russian and Ukrainian negotiators in Saudi Arabia in the coming days. That's according to U.S. Representative Michael McCaul, who spoke to Reuters at the Munich Security Conference on Saturday. It was confirmed by a source with knowledge of the plans. The officials include Secretary of State Marco Rubio, who held a phone call on Saturday with his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov. They discussed the conflict in Ukraine, both parties said. They also agreed on regular contacts to prepare for a meeting between Russian President Vladimir Putin and Trump, Russia's foreign ministry said. McCaul, who is chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, said it was his understanding that Zelensky had been invited to participate in the Saudi talks. McCaul said the talks were aimed at arranging a meeting with Trump, Putin, and Zelensky, quote, to finally bring peace and end this conflict. Zelensky was asked by reporters in Munich about the planned meeting between U.S. and Russian officials in Saudi Arabia.
Maybe there is something at the table, but not on our table. So I didn't see any invitations, envoys, and etc. from Ukraine to meet with some other envoys. And it's something strange for me to speak in this case and this format. If before we don't have any negotiation between us and our strategic partners. As I remember, Russia is not our strategic partner.
Zelensky said earlier on Saturday that Ukraine would never accept any peace deals reached behind its back or without Kyiv's involvement.
That's Reuters' Olivia Zelino. And as we've just heard, Ukraine is sitting on massive deposits of rare earth minerals, and how it chooses to use them could be instrumental for its future. In fact, Ukraine's vast reserves of critical minerals give it the potential to be a strategic supplier for the West. President Trump is considering a deal that would continue U.S. support for Ukraine in the war against Russia in exchange for access to those minerals. With reporting from Anna Chernikova in Kyiv, Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gungadze has our story from Warsaw.
The Zavalivska mine in central Ukraine holds one of Europe's largest deposits of graphite, a key component in electric vehicle batteries and nuclear reactors. It is just one of Ukraine's vast reserves of critical minerals that the West is seeking as it tries to reduce its dependence on China for such raw materials. With the right investments, officials with the mine say it could become a global player in the graphite sector.
It's about billions of dollars in years of investments to make move at this process here. Ukrainian government should cooperate pretty close with American partners, with other European partners, with big worldwide players to create this basis together.
The Ukrainian government say the country holds deposits of 22 of the 50 strategic materials identified as critical by the United States, and it holds 25 of the 34 that the European Union classifies as critically important. These resources include graphite, lithium, titanium, and uranium, minerals essential for defense, green energy, and high-tech applications industries. While the country has enormous potential, experts say it will take major investments to tap those resources.
Rare earth projects are very not only important, they are strategic for development, not only our Western partner, but our development.
BGV, a Ukrainian mining investment company, says it has spent $100 million on critical mineral projects. But it needs hundreds of millions more in investment to scale up its operations.
For development of graphite mining in Balakhivka, this is around $450 million of the total capex that we need to invest.
As the U.S. and other Western nations seek to reduce their dependence on China for critical minerals, Ukraine sees an opportunity to bolster its economy and security.
We're based on win-win strategy. We know that they need this material. And this is not only material, this is a product with high added value.
The U.S. and the EU have worked for years to reduce their reliance on China, the world's top supplier of rare earth minerals.
Ukraine will help Europe and the U.S. to minimize the dependence on China and partially from Russia. And also, of course, strengthen the resilience of the country. For Ukraine, the deliver of investors in such high amount, it could work as the Iron Dome.
Roman Opimach says he sees the partnership as both strategic and economic. And despite the war and potential territorial losses, he says most critical minerals remain under Kyiv's control. With Anna Chernikova in Kyiv, Miroslava Gungadze, VOA News, Warsaw.
And here are some other stories we're following from around the world. Health officials in Chad have sealed several dozen schools, sent thousands of children and their teachers home, and restricted movements to and from the Bologo district to contain a measles epidemic. Many churches and mosques in the district are closed too. Officials blame vaccine skepticism for the rapid spread of the disease within the past 2 weeks. About 50 cases of measles have been confirmed, and all seven of the local hospitals in the district have at least five children receiving treatment for measles. Austrian authorities said the man accused of stabbing six passers-by in broad daylight, killing a 14-year-old boy and wounding five others, was motivated by Islamic terrorism. The suspect, a 23-year-old Syrian man, was arrested after the attack in the southern city of Wilach on Saturday. Interior Minister Gerhard Karner told reporters there that the attacker had ties to the Islamic State group and radicalized himself online within a very short time. An Italian nun is taking over a top management job in the Vatican. On Saturday, Sister Raffaella Petrini was named as president of the Vatican City-State, making her essentially the governor of the territory in Rome that is home to the Catholic Church. Pope Francis had previously announced Petrini's promotion, part of his effort to place women in decision-making roles in the Vatican to serve as models for the rest of the church. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Karish. And now we look at the U.S. and American domestic politics. You might have heard how Elon Musk and his team at the so-called Department of Government Efficiency have been talking about eliminating entire government departments. But it was President Trump who suggested eliminating the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. That's the agency charged with assisting victims following natural disasters. Emily Russell lost her home and many possessions in Hurricane Helene, a powerful hurricane that ravaged the American Southeast a few months ago, but was particularly destructive in the mountains of western North Carolina, where Russell lives.
The water started coming up the vents in the house where the basement had completely got overtook, and then you just started hearing parts of the house getting tore off over there, and it started kicking in the doors from the pressure of the water, and it was just crazy.
She remembers feeling hopeful after she managed to get an appointment with FEMA not long after the hurricane damaged her home. But after several assistance requests were denied or left pending, Russell says the agency has been of no help to her family. Still reeling in a world turned upside down by the most damaging storm in state history, she finds herself open to President Trump's suggestion about getting rid of FEMA.
I mean, honestly, it's not helped a lot of us around here, so even if he got rid of FEMA, wouldn't hurt or help us in any way.
That's a common sentiment in the mountains of western North Carolina, where living in a trailer with limited supplies for months can try anyone's patience. To Russell and many others, Trump saying he would consider eliminating FEMA made sense. To some experts and officials, however, that could cause more problems than it would solve. North Carolina's government estimated that Helene cost a record $59.6 billion in damages. FEMA has contributed about $380 million through public assistance grants to the state and local governments, as well as approximately $372 million directly to North Carolinians, this according to the agency. FEMA's responsibilities include direct financial assistance to individuals and reimbursements to governments for recovery tasks like debris removal and rebuilding roads.
Federal assistance is really designed to meet immediate needs for habitability.
That's Miyuki Hino, a professor of city and regional planning at the University of North Carolina.
So it is certainly not the case that FEMA is going to come in and put everything back to the perfect state that it was in before. They will be the first to tell you that your homeowner's insurance and your flood insurance should be your primary resources for recovering.
Danny Bailey, a 61-year-old retiree, said he received $42,500 after losing practically everything from flooding, including the trailer he lived in. Bailey already spent some of his money on necessities, such as propane to make it through the winter. He lives in a donated trailer on his property, now a mudded, rutted expanse. FEMA, he said, should have done more.
Well, if this is the way they are, he ought to do away with them.
Complaints about FEMA's application process are common because of the administrative hurdles in place to ensure applicants' eligibility. Again, Professor Hino.
In the aftermath of disasters, a lot of the administrative steps that are taken are to ensure that assistance is going to eligible households for eligible costs. And those are processes that take time, unfortunately.
There's always been an underlying tension on the federal government's role in natural disaster response, but Hino says the agency's increasing politicization could be attributed to the rising frequency of historic disasters fueled by climate change. Furthermore, dissolving FEMA could create issues when disasters extend beyond state lines or localities need expertise on disasters they're not used to confronting. Overall, eliminating FEMA would likely slow the recovery process for future disasters, she said. FEMA's potential eradication worries Dalton George. He's the mayor pro tempore of Boone, a mountain town in Watauga County that was also ravaged by Helene. Despite understandable frustrations, he said, the agency moved quickly to help. It's contributed money for home restorations as well as keeping several families in hotels under its transitory sheltering program, he said. responsibilities would partly be shifted onto local governments. George said towns such as Boone do not have the resources for that. Private organizations would need to step up more than they already have, George said, and they're already overextended. Turning now to the Middle East, U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio says Hamas must be eradicated. He spoke alongside Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu as he echoed President Donald Trump's vision for a Gaza free from the influence of Hamas. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Three male hostages taken by Hamas returned to Israel after more than 15 months of captivity. The hostage release is part of a fragile ceasefire deal with Israel in which both parties agreed to lay down arms during hostage and prisoner swaps. Among those freed by Hamas was dual U.S.-Israeli national Sagi Dekochen. He reunited with his wife, who hid in a safe room with their two daughters during the October 7, 2023 attacks, in which Hamas took some 250 people hostage. The freed hostages arrived at a hospital as U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio began a regional tour of the Middle East.
Hamas cannot continue as a military or government force. And frankly, as long as it stands as a force that can govern or as a force that can administer or as a force that can threaten by use of violence, peace becomes impossible. They must be eliminated. They must be eradicated.
As hostages saw their families and received medical care, both Rubio and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke of unity against Iran's regional influence.
Today, Secretary Rubio and I had a very productive discussion with our staffs on a number of issues. None of them are more important than Iran. Israel and America stand shoulder to shoulder in countering the threat of Iran. We agreed that the Ayatollahs must not have nuclear weapons. And we also agree that Iran's aggression in the region has to be rolled back.
As part of the hostage deal, Israel released 369 Palestinian prisoners and detainees. 36 were serving life sentences. Israeli military offensives flattened much of Gaza since the war with Hamas began. Israel says it targets terrorists. Palestinians call the strikes indiscriminate. Trump says he'd like to see regional actors like Egypt and Jordan take in the roughly 2.3 million Palestinians displaced from fighting. This is something neither government seems inclined to do. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
And finally today, we've reported here before about the absolutely massive Hindu religious festival going on now in India, the Maha Kumbh Mela, and how in years past, there's been stampedes in which people were killed at the festival. Well, sadly, it's happened again, but not at the festival itself. This time, it was the main train station in the capital city of New Delhi that was the site of the tragedy. So far, at least 18 people are known to have been killed, and it looks like many of the victims were headed to Prayagraj, the site of the Maha Kumbh Mela, where authorities are expecting hundreds of millions of attendees. Diane To of Reuters has more.
People were still seen pushing to pack into trains in India's capital city on Sunday, even as the death toll rose from a crowd crush the night before. A railway public relations officer said at least a dozen and a half people were killed. Several children were among them, according to local media reports. The tragedy took place on Saturday evening in New Delhi's main railway station. Media reports said passengers were waiting to board trains to Prayagraj city, where the Hindu Maha Kumbh festival was taking place, when the crowd suddenly surged. This man was one of those heading to the festival. His wife was killed in the crush. The crowd started pushing and people were falling over us, he said. My wife passed away on the spot. There were scenes of chaos as those injured were rushed to hospital. This man said his mother died after being crushed under the surge of people. Deputy Police Commissioner KPS Malhotra told reporters that two trains had been delayed, leading to an increase of people gathered on the platforms. The country's railway minister said an inquiry had been ordered into the incident.
That's Diane To of Reuters reporting for us, and that'll wrap it up for today. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Steve Karish.